Red Circle. This is Ed Angelus. We're now in season 4, episode 59 of this podcast. And this time we'll be discussing another interesting topic about AML, Digital Frontier. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Mr. Eric Fabila, the CEO and founder of Amlakas Corporation from Singapore, as he shares with us his valuable insights on the anti-money laundering digital platform and its relevance to our virtual economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. Asia Pacific anti-money laundering market is expected to gain market growth in the forecast period of 2024 to 2028. Deloitte Market Research analyzes that the market is growing with a compound annual growth rate of 14% in the forecast period of 2024 to 2028 and expected to reach $1.6 million by 2028. Growing demand for transaction monitoring system that assess financial crime patterns and can act as a major factor for the growth of the market. Some of the factors which are driving the market are rise in money laundering cases across the globe, an increasing focus of financial institutions on digital payment-related issues, never-ending growth of financial crimes using advanced technology can be a restraining factor as well, growing demand for AML solution in banks and financial institutions is among some of the factors which can be an opportunity for the market itself. Insufficiency of advanced information technology systems to implement AML solutions can be a major challenge for the market growth in these regions. On the basis of offering the Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market is segmented into solution and services. Solution segment further subsegment at KYC and CDD watch list, as well as transaction screening and monitoring, case management, and regulatory reporting. Service segment is further classified as managed services and professional services. In 2022, Solution held major share in the market due to growing demand for AML identification and monitoring solutions for various industries. On the basis of function, The Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market has been classified into compliance management, currency transaction reporting, customer identity management, and transaction monitoring. In 2023, compliance management held largest share in the market owing to factors such as increasing stringent regulations and compliances for AML to strengthen the solution. On the basis of deployment, the Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market has been classified into on-premise and cloud. In 2022, the cloud held maximum share in the market with growth attributed to factors such rise in money laundering cases across globe. On the basis of enterprise size, the Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market has been classified into small, medium, and large enterprises. In 2024, large enterprises held major share in the market, and this is mainly due to increasing focus of financial institutions on digital payment-related issues, such as transaction monitoring. On the basis of end use, the Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market has been classified into banks and financial institutions, as well as insurance providers, gaming and gambling, government and others, and each segment of end users are classified by offering different solutions and services. In 2023, banks and financial institutions held largest share in the market, owing to factors such as growing demands for transaction monitoring systems that assess financial crime patterns. The major players in the Asia-Pacific region for AML platform and services are the following. We do have Cognizant, Accenture, Oracle, Temenos, IBM Corporation, Experian Information Solutions, SAS Institute, Microsoft, NICE Limited, TCS or Tata Consulting Services, OpenTex Corporation, BAE Systems, ACI Worldwide, Fiserv Incorporated, FIS, Intel Corporation, SAP SE, Finastra, Signal, Amlakas Corporation, among others. Many product developments are also initiated by the companies worldwide, which are also accelerating the growth of anti-money laundering market. For instance, in September 2021, BAE Systems launched an anti-money laundering regulatory compliance solutions for Amazon Web Services. And the key feature of the solution was availability, reliability, and security. The solution also provided various other features such as advisory services and implementation, migration, and management of regulatory and compliance solutions. In November 2022, ACI Worldwide launched a new solution to fraud prevention using cloud. And the key feature of the solution was the usage of advanced technology such as machine learning and predictive analytics to help banks and intermediaries to identify and mitigate financial fraud. The solution was designed and launched to meet the fast-changing global fraud landscape, increasing pressure on financial institutions, and maximize operational efficiencies, and mitigate increased risk. Partnership, joint ventures, and other strategies enhances the company market share with increased coverage and presence. It also provides the benefit for organizations to improve their offering for the whole Asia-Pacific anti-money laundering market through expanded range of size. So there's a lot of variety of options in front of us, basically within our reach, and for us to make a proper decision on which AML platform that will somehow be a fit for purpose with regards to our own specific requirement. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to Mr. Eric Fabula, the founder and chief executive officer of Amlacus, a very promising AML digital platform, and he will explain to us the value proposition and its significant relevance to our digital economy. It's a great privilege to have you, Eric, and welcome to FinCircle.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Eric, and we do appreciate that. Let's probably start by describing the state of financial industry in relation to anti-money laundering and fraud in the Asia-Pacific region. And where do you think we're going?
So I think the state of the financial industry in the Asia-Pacific region has been quite fatigued, especially in the AML or anti-money laundering space. With all the financial institutions that I've worked with in the region, there's been regulatory fatigue. There's been a lot of challenges in the industry in terms of dealing with the operational burdens of complying with money laundering rules. And then if we look at the second item that you mentioned, fraud, because of digitization and the development of e-wallets and making payments even faster, the ability of nefarious elements out there has been enhanced. So financial institutions have been challenged even more in terms of detecting and preventing fraud. And I think that will only continue, right? Why do I say that? Because, nefarious elements, they are well-resourced, they're creative, they're innovative, right? And I think most importantly, they're motivated. With those three elements, they are more organized. I have a colleague of mine who always said, organized crime is up against disorganized banks. Right? So I think that is unfortunately the current state, and without any fundamental changes in how financial institutions do things, it will always be an operational challenge.
I understand, Eric, that you're the founder and CEO of Amlacus Corporation, which provides a very powerful AML digital platform. Hence, what are your main influences and motivation in starting this remarkable initiative?
Well, thank you for that question. And I think I just have to try to hone in on powerful, because I think in this day and age of technology, I'm not sure what powerful means anymore. Is it more tech? Is it more AI? Is it Web3 and all of those things? But I think, in my view, what is powerful, or at least meaningful for financial institutions in this space, is what is sensible, what makes an impact, right? What is meaningful to the business? Because at the end of the day, financial institutions, or anyone covered by regulations, right, is a profit-making entity, right? So power in the sense is having tools or solutions that are fit for purpose, right? That are sustainable. So, we're not talking about solutions here that are high tech, right? We're looking for solutions that that are fit for purpose based on the specific franchises of the financial institutions. What a commercial bank would use would be very different from what the retail bank would use from a remittance company or a pawn shop or a rural bank. And then there will also be differences across regions because of varying regulations. So I think in that sense, right, to me, that's what or how we interpret powerful in this space. When it comes to the influences and motivations, back in 2019, I I got quite involved in the investigation of online sexual exploitation of children, right? So this is a crime that has always been there, but especially in the during the pandemic, this has exacerbated quite a bit, right? A lot of the media that has been out there, or even a lot of the discussions in the Senate has been around, where do the perpetrators and the producers of this material communicate and exchange materials? Social media companies, we're talking the Metas of the world, Skype, name it. That's where they're on. But this type of crime is commercial in nature, right? So the fundamental question, or what really motivated me, was understanding that there really isn't enough being done in the payment space or the financial institution space, because if the payment stops, or if you're able to interdict payments to abuse a child, right, there's no abuse.
Given that this AML platform is relatively new in the financial market, then what are the initial hurdles that you've somehow encountered, and your relevant takeaways from these challenging circumstances?
In the start of it's been very, very challenging in many ways. First and foremost, the prospects that we have, they try to understand, am I some other, fintech that's come along, right? Do I know what I'm talking about? Right? Does our company know what it's trying to pursue? Second, what they typically ask is, is the regulator familiar with you? Right? So I think, given my work before starting Amlakas, right? Which was really in the prevention of financial crime. I think that enabled us to demonstrate that we knew what we were talking about. We knew how to deliver and develop systems that are fit for purpose and that would be sensible for financial institutions. And second, because of the close work that we've been doing more on advocacy, right, to support the regulators, law enforcement, and NGOs, in combating OSEC, that has given us some name recognition to these parties. But just like any other startup, it's getting those initial set of clients is always challenging.
I understand, Eric, that your geographical focus is the Philippines. And we all know that the landscape of AML in the country is dynamic and complex one. Therefore, what do you think will be the value proposition of your AML platform on this particular instance?
I think the as I mentioned earlier, we're not necessarily looking at high tech. We're not, although we use AI in some of the aspects of our workflow, right? It is not something that I harp about. It's not something that we harp about as Amlakas. The unique value proposition that we offer is an advisory overlay, right, on top of the technology that we deliver. There are countless technology companies out there that will provide compliance solutions or any technological solutions for that matter. As long as a buyer or a client can specify what you want the tech to do, right? However, in the space of compliance and interpretation of regulation, sometimes even financial institutions don't have a clear idea of how to configure or implement these tools, right? So imagine if I could sell an F1 car, right? Very technically capable piece of equipment. If the person I'm selling it to does not know how to operate one of these pieces of equipment, what good is it, right? And I think When it comes to financial institutions, although they can understand the motivation of the regulation, depending on, the risk appetite of their respective boards, what their business franchise is about, what their risk profiles are, what their controls are, that in itself is a complex set of things to think about before you configure or design a solution. So where we really set ourselves apart is bringing those two together. Right? We will spend the time to understand your business, make recommendations, and suggest how to best implement the technology.
What has been the adoption ratio that you have observed in the Philippines, Eric, relative to the implementation of AML solution on the local financial institutions at this point in time?
Do you want my honest answer or do you want the official answer? Because I'm sorry I joke about that. Because as you can imagine, this is a regulated space, right? If I was the regulator coming to these institutions, of course, they have something, there's some level of adoption. Whether that is, the most sophisticated tech out there, we have the big names, NYSE, ACTIMIZE, SAS, that kind of stuff. On the other extreme of that spectrum is you have something that's manual. It's also acceptable, right? And then there's everything in between, including Excel, right? So I think, as far as adoption is concerned, we're close to 100% for being technically compliant. That's one thing, right? The other question is being effectively compliant. So as you can imagine, my view on those that are effectively compliant is much, much lower.
One of the biggest challenges in the Philippines, Eric, that was highlighted by the regulators are dealing with false positives. How do you think your AML platform will be able to assist on mitigating this situation?
As I mentioned earlier, so our offering is a combination of quality advice and technology. And when we talk about technology, right, there, a part of that is data. And unfortunately, it's data that is publicly available, right? And one of the first things you look at when dealing with high rates of false positives is making sure the data set that you have from the vendors that you engage, that it's as complete as possible. But as you can imagine, because it's publicly available, everyone will pretty much have the same access to that data. Now, the differentiation is, right, really looking into the processes of the specific financial institutions we engage, one, and two, exploring the data sets that they have to help justify, right, how to overcome false positives quickly. There are simple approaches such as whitelisting certain transactions or individuals, right? But there are also ways of automating the disposition of these hits or false positives based on data that is already existing within our organization. The problem is it easy to collect? Sorry, first, do they collect it? Two, is it easy to collect? And then three, is it easy to synthesize for dispositions?
That's a very good point, Eric. I understand that there are several fit-for-purpose features of this particular AML digital platform. Perhaps you can tell us more about it, and what should be our realistic expectation on this regard?
Sure. The very foundation of how we look at fit for purpose is we first look at the regulatory obligations of a financial institution. I'll give you an example. In the Philippines, when you the obligations of institutions regulated by the BSP and the AMLC is to make sure that they screen against the United Nations Security Council list, right? And the Philippine Anti-Terrorist Council list. It's just those two, right? That's bare minimum. Now, as you can imagine, some institutions in the Philippines have obligations to other regulators. If you have obligations to the US, if you have any nexus to the US, if you have offices in Singapore, the lot, right? Then we would add on those obligations. I think that's the very basic set, because a lot of providers out there, they'll just give you everything, right? So which generates more false positives, right? What is the point of a rural bank in, I don't know, in Davao City, right, that has no obligations to any foreign institutions? Why are they screening against OFAC, right, which has many Filipino-sounding names? Because of their proximity to Mexico. That just generates more false positives. And the second, I think, more complicated part of making it fit for purpose is our in-depth view of looking at an institution's core processes, right, and policies to make sure that how a piece of technology or overall solution is configured so that it is fit for person, fit for purpose in their specific use case.
The commercial cost remains the main driver on influencing decisions. Thus, 60% of local banks in the Philippines acknowledge that these are the top three considerations in getting an AML platform, for instance. Hence, how does AMLACAS fare on this particular category?
Thank you for bringing this up. I think I felt bad I didn't mention it a bit earlier. So part of my motivation in developing AMLACAS and its solutions in 2022, when I was looking at why institutions in the Philippines were not very proactive in combating OSEC, amongst the various findings I've had, the biggest issue I had was many institutions found the tools were expensive, right? One is a very simple tool is a name screening tool, right? From a technology standpoint, developing something to do that is not difficult, right? With enough Excel skills, that will work, right? Now the issue is the data that comes along with it, right? And then on top of that is how it translates to an institution's processes, right? I was of the view that it need not be expensive, right? And I think the feedback of the industry and the regulators, in fact, is that, yes, there is some pushback from the industry that tools that are available in the market today are prohibitive, right? Or they don't see the value of paying the cost for these tools. Now, how do I fare, right? The goal, right, of AMLACAS, right, is that if you do not get this tool, especially for a Philippine institution, if you do not get the AMLACAS tool, right, price cannot be the reason. It's either we do not have the appropriate data sets, or we do not fit your business profile. And I'm not saying I cover all the institutional types in the Philippines, right? But I think for the most part we do. But it has to be a technical obstacle as opposed to price, right? So of all the price conversations I've had, we've not had any pushback, right? It's typically the first question, how much is that, right? And once we overcome that, we look into the other more problematic issues. Maybe they're their tech stacks are not compatible with ours, or our data sets are incomplete, or do not fit the requirements. But yeah, it's affordable. And that's all I can say. Because the Philippines, for now, right, is really the focus, because the advocacy side of me is looking to help combat OSEC more widely.
Given your significant experience on this field, Eric, any word of advice that you can give to everyone on the AML and fraud digital initiatives?
Yeah, and I think in if we're talking about the Philippines, right, the one thing I would say is that the baseline is, I think, education, right? And when I say education, it is really educating first the board, right, and senior management, and the regulator of what you do, one, two, demonstrating to the regulator an understanding of the risks you're exposed to, right? And demonstrating to the regulator how you're dealing with those risks, right? So if you look at that process, it's essentially a risk assessment of your business, right? And all institutions will do this when it comes to lending, when it comes to developing a new product. Like, is it worth it, right? If I enter a new product line, are the revenues adequate? Is it interesting enough? What are the risks? And we will cover that. When it comes to this space of anti-money laundering and fraud, it's a little different. And even between those two, it's quite different, because the cost of fraud is the bottom line for a financial institution. The risk for AML is a penalty from the regulator. And that one is harder to measure. Right? And looking at history, in the Philippines, we can look at a big one, right? Which was case with the Bangladesh Bank, which was a record fine, but even then, it's, I would argue, affordable to the financial institutions, right? I think it's really being able to avoid getting in the crosshairs of a regulator. That's the AML risk, really, right? In the Philippines. So in the same way that we as professionals, as we get into our later years in life, we want to make sure we stay healthy, right? So we continuously do these self-checks. We have our blood work done, that kind of thing, so that we're aware of where the risks are. And it's the same with money laundering and fraud prevention.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're working on, Eric, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? And most importantly, what are the easiest way of reaching you?
Yeah, maybe let's the easiest way to reach me is through email, efavila@amlakas.com, or you can just say eric@amlakas.com, right? I can also be found on LinkedIn under Eric Favila. And you can also reach us through our website, amlakas.com. That is AMLAKAS.com. And I think just to share some of the initiatives that AMLAKAS is really driven on is the desire to make an impact in activating the financial services sector in the Philippines to combat OSEC. I know we're probably closing the conversation, but just a little bit about what we're doing on OSEC. I mentioned earlier so OSEC is a significant risk in the Philippines, right? There was a study that was released in 2023 by a US-based NGO, International Justice Mission, where they estimate Nearly 500,000 children are exploited in the Philippines, right? And if we talk about, if we ask, what is the risk of that, right? A typical businessman will ask, like, how much money is flowing when it comes to exploitation of children, right? If each transaction is anywhere between 10 US dollars, right, and 50 US dollars, it's nothing in the greater scheme of things, right? But now let's multiply those 500,000 children, right, by imagine how many times they're abused in a year. The numbers are astronomical. But that's just the financial cost of any given year. What we're talking about is the trauma inflicted on 500,000 youth. What does that, what, where will they be 10 years from now? Will they continue to be productive adults, or will they perpetuate the crime? I think that is the issue. And what we're trying to do as a an advisor and solution provider in the financial services sector is to have common sense approaches to detect these payments and interdict, right? To do two things. One, prevent the payment from happening, therefore preventing the abuse from happening. And two, be able to assist law enforcement in the rescue of children and prosecution of the perpetrators, right? That is a, that is the biggest role a financial institution can do in combating this crime.
Thanks so much, Eric, for sharing us your valuable insights on AML and fraud, digital platform, as well as its critical importance to our digital economy. We wish you all the best and great success in the future.
Thanks a lot, Ed. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Possible by Amlakas Corporation. We would like to express our sincere appreciation to Mr. Eric Pavila on sharing us his insightful views on AML digital platform and its significant relevance to our digital economy. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Audible, Overcast, TuneIn, CastBox, iHeartRadio, Anchor.fm, and affiliated podcast platforms. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. this at Angelus. Let's catch up again soon.